Tiffany Jordan, WPFW's Development Director. And you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington. Good evening, Washington, D.C., and America, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Join the fray as we broadcast live from the golden studios of WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica. Join Terry, Mark, and Garland as they boldly go where no commentators have gone before to inform, even save the nation with wit, wisdom, and sagacity on the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Raucous Caucus. My name's Garland Nixon and I'm right here with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D. Kester.
Holy moly, Terry D. Kester. And you're listening to the Raucous Caucus. We are here every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. Terry, did you have a word to start us off with, I believe?
Yeah, a little bit of a somber word, yes. Or quite of a somber word. The station
always
and staff is in a bit of mourning here, and just want to mention that Verna Avery Brown's my colleague on What's at Stake. All of our colleagues love Verna and all that she does for the station, and her husband unexpectedly has died. And this probably our listeners know of this, and I'm sure there'll be more information forthcoming, but just want to add our prayers, our condolences, and our love for Verna and her family.
Absolutely. From here at the Raucous Caucus, we love Verna, and we certainly feel for her. And, we'll certainly be here to support her. The station as a whole, I'm sure, you know, has everyone said everything, said you know, given their condolences, et cetera. But, of course, on the Raucous Caucus here, we wanted to make sure that we said what we had to say.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
At any rate, we got plenty to talk about, I believe.
I understand there's an election coming up.
Yeah, we're two weeks from a major election.
I heard it was canceled.
Only if you're a Republican.
Yeah, that's right. There's a couple things I want to throw out there.
It's like those signs they put up to suppress voting. They say things like, if you're a Republican, if you're a Democrat, vote on Wednesday, you know, November 7th.
Oh, yeah, right. They always send that stuff out.
Right.
Here's something, Terry, you might find interesting. You know,
Tuesday, November 6th.
This is something that, before we talk about the last night's debate and you know the once again sudden 180 degree reversals of our man Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. This kind of freaks me out, and I want you guys to comment on it. And that is that I'm stunned in a manner in a manner of speaking, because right now where we have the most economically unequal. Economy, financially unequal economy in modern times. We have a guy who is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He's top 0.1%, if not 0.01%. His very platform, is to give tons and tons of money to him and his financial and economic peers.
Yeah.
I am worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and my platform is I'm going to give lots of money to people with hundreds of millions of dollars, number one.
Right.
And number two, that I am going to – I come from a company – I made all my money with a company named called Bain Capital. I am going to deregulate huge corporations, companies, Wall Street bankers, hedge fund managers, companies like Bain Capital. I'm going to strip the regulations off of these companies, and I'm going to give tons of money to rich people. And half the country kind of is really kind of thinking about voting for these people. This freaks me out. So I'm going to ask you guys what you think of it. But first, before that, I'm going to give you some statistics. The top 1% of America owns 40% of the nation's wealth. The richest 1% of Americans now own 40% of the nation's wealth. Sociologist William Dunhoff illustrates this wealth disparity using 2007 figures, where the top 1% owned 42% of the country's financial wealth. How much does the bottom 80% own? The bottom 80%.
Oh, hold on. I know
7%.
This. Right.
The top 1%.
It's not going down, so don't worry.
The top 10% owns 85%.
Yep. Yeah,
the next 10% owns 8%. Yeah. And then the remaining 7%, the remaining 80% owns 7%.
Right.
So, the top, so 10 to 20 owns more than 20 to 100.
The top 1% of Americans take home 24% of the national income. The top 1% of Americans own half of the country's stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. The top 1% of Americans have only 5% of the nation's personal debt. The top 1% are taking in more of the nation's income than at any time since the 1920s. All that being said, half of this country is thinking about voting for a guy who's in the top 0.1%, and his very platform is basically based on the belief that these people don't have enough, and if you just give them more, then we'll all be better off. Terry, let's start with Terry.
Well, you got to respect Mitt in one way, because when he's talking about, you know, all the money and his business experience and everything else, by the way, it was a small business, you remember, when he started. He only had $34 million to work
business,
with.
Terry. He still considers it a small business.
Yeah. But you got to understand, he's talking about jobs here. And now, he didn't say what kind of jobs. You got to remember that. Slavery is a job.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and
chain
that
if you're in jail
that Mitt has and his cronies, you know, they're going to go all the way till they get all of the money. Then they can get the plantations. Well, they've already got the plantations all over the world, but they haven't got quite slave labor yet. And damn it, you know, some of that slave labor that they have right now can vote. So this is the goal of Mitt Romney, slave labor.
But Terry,
slavery,
the question,
it's going to work, it's positive, everybody's going to have a job, they're going to be eating chitlins, and that's all there is to it, and Mitt Romney's going to be very happy, and the American people can just go.
Well, I'm going to throw this over to Mark. I'm going to come back to you, Terry. I'm going to throw this over to Mark, and I'm going to throw this question back to you, because I want to know, Mark, why are these people voting? Why are these people even considering voting for this guy?
First of all,
I want to give you
a few more statistics, by the way. First of all, you said the top 1% has 42% of the nation's wealth. That's true. The top 10% has 85% of the nation's wealth. And then, of course, the top 20% has 93%. And the bottom half of America?
Mm-hmm.
Half of America.
That would be me.
All of Americans.
That would be me and Terry.
Combine
oh,
their
way
wealth
below that.
Entirely,
we're way below the bottom half.
And they are less than 0.3% of the nation's wealth. Basically, they own nothing.
You're right.
So that's one statistic. The other thing that you should know is that the capital gains tax, the one that Mitt Romney wants to reduce,
mm-hmm.
Three-quarters of it is paid by people who make $1.5 million or more every year.
Mm-hmm.
$1.5 million or more every year. Now, not have $1.5 million with all their assets together they built up over – no. They make that much every year. Those are the taxes that Mitt Romney wants to cut. Now, why do people want to vote for Mitt? Well, for one thing, some people believe Mitt Romney. The new Mitt, as apart from the Mitt of a week ago.
Which new Mitt?
Mitt 19.3. All right.
As opposed to the one today.
Well, okay, that was Mitt 19.2. And then the one in the debate was Mitt 19.0. He switched majorly 19 times and then minorly 3 times. Mitt Romney claims now to be a moderate. He claims now not to be under the control of the conservatives. But here's the thing about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney has zero backbone. We learned that last night with that. Oh, me too. Whatever you say, yes. Obama, I agree with you. You know, he will do whatever the right wing wants him to do. And the reason we know that to be true is because, well, in the primaries, he was to the right of Rick Perry. He was to the right of Newt Gingrich. He argued that they were too liberal for him, Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich.
But don't forget,
Santorum,
before that,
Michelle
he was
Bachman.
Here's a guy that was to the left
right.
of Ted Kennedy.
Very few people
Let
are
me
to
tell
the
you, man.
Left of Ted
this
Kennedy
guy covers some ground.
And the right of Rick Perry. It's hard
yeah,
to
you
do.
Know, but, you know, but guys, you know, the real issue, I mean, I got to look at the bigger picture.
Well,
here,
Terry,
you know,
but
I think
you were going to tell us why these people are voting for
yeah.
him. Why?
Because,
people, you know, like you and I and Mark are voting for him.
You're looking for a logical reason. You're looking for mathematical and statistic reasons, and that's not what it's about,
it's
guys. I hate to tell you.
No.
You know, the real question here, the real issue is, our society, our people, our media has mistaken campaigning for governance. We don't have governance anymore in a responsible way. We have nothing but permanent campaigning, and that's all that goes on.
Marketing.
And people have bought into this without even realizing it. The debates, as far as I'm concerned, have practically no substance whatsoever. They did not address any of the really important issues, including
they
the
did.
Issues
they
you
addressed...
just brought up.
No.
Climate change?
Terry, they addressed the fact that we no longer need horses and bayonets, and I agree
with
exactly. the president on
exactly.
that.
That's about as serious as it got, and it's about as
valuable
as it got.
That was my favorite part of the debate. Hey, don't knock that.
I don't know. I like binders full of women. Binders
well,
full of women
that was
are always
last
good.
Debate.
Oh,
yeah,
binders.
I mean, what you're proving, guys, you know, and, you know, they're kind of stealing our muster, you know, but... The campaigns have become entertainment. That's all they are. And so what we're judging, you know, is the performance. The issues aren't being talked about. The really big issues, including income disparity, is not being discussed. Whatever happened to Occupy Now, by the way. Anyway, all that has been disguised by campaigning. And what we're really seeing here with the money and the voter suppression and the fact that people don't understand what governance is, including the candidates, we're losing democracy. We really, really are losing
democracy. Let me answer your question, though, about why people are voting against their interests. I think there's a couple reasons to answer it seriously. One is the old American dream. There are people that believe that I'm going to be a multimillionaire someday. There's 99 – well, I don't want to say 99%. Let's just say 50% of Americans believe they can be in the top 1%. They haven't really done the math, and they think they can be there. And there's this sort of image of, I got mine, Jack, I can do it by myself. And it reminds me of the I forgot who it was, the idiot who came
Mitt
on
Romney.
TV.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, no,
that
was a different
Paul
idiot.
Paul Ryan?
Oh, different idiot.
Different
I'm
idiot
sorry.
Who came, well, in some sense, it was Paul Ryan, who came on the air and said, I made it by myself. I was once on welfare, and I made it by myself. I forget who it was who said that.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you were once on welfare, you didn't make it by yourself.
That was virtually everyone... at the Republican convention.
Well,
they were all born in a small log cabin.
Right.
And you know,
no,
they...
Paul Ryan actually is one of those examples because his father died young.
Yeah.
His family survived on Social Security survivor benefits, which, by the way, is one of those wonderful things Social
Security
does.
So he's a socialist.
Yeah,
people
don't talk
socialism.
About it a lot. People think of it as only as a retirement program, but it's also a
survivor
program,
benefit.
A disability program.
Yep.
It does a lot of things. He survived on it, and then he's like, I'm a self-made man. No, you're not.
So now,
dude,
let's get rid of it. You know what it's like? He's climbing up the roof and pulling the ladder up behind,
exactly,
basically,
right.
Pull the ladder up behind.
There's
me.
Another
exactly.
big reason too. There's another big reason, and that's simply to make a point that people like simple answers.
Yes.
There's one thing that Romney has done, which is very clever, very underhanded, but still very clever. He's repeated the same line every single debate and every single campaign, and that's his 5-point program. It doesn't matter that it's nonsense. It doesn't matter that mathematically
points.
It doesn't hold up.
It's not just
he has repeated that religiously, and
I
use the term correctly and directly. He's repeated that every single moment he can, and people buy into that.
His 5 points
that's
are like
brainwashing, and it works.
No
deficits. You take a big lie and you say it often enough and often enough, you will convince people that big lie is the truth.
Well, here's the thing about it too, and that is, most people, there are people that are going to say, I'm voting for Mitt Romney and I support his 5-point plan. Really, what is it? Oh, I don't remember what it is. He knows.
At least page 999 was memorable.
Yeah. He does it. There people will hear that he has a 5-point plan and they won't even know what it is, but they'll think, oh, well, this guy's got a 5-point plan.
Mitt Romney doesn't know what it is.
His 5-point plan, what it is it's a bunch of it's a bunch of chapter headings with no chapters inside.
Exactly.
It's chicken in every pot.
It's
a pony for every child.
Energy self-sufficiency. How are we going to do it? I'm not going to tell you.
We'll handle that later.
We're going to have no deficits.
Of course not.
Massive tax cuts and increased spending.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do it without printing any money.
Yeah, and you know
how
what
are we going to do it? Fairy dust.
Yeah. And you know
apparently
what else we're going to do?
Fairy dust.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to eat chocolate cake, ice cream, and soda
puppies
every day.
And
you know what? And we'll never gain a pound.
Never.
And
never.
You're not going to have a car in every garage because he's going to let Detroit go bankrupt.
Well, he's already got 13 or so in his garage.
Elevator in every
garage. In the top 1%.
And a horse riding on top of the car.
Now, let's throw some blame back in the other direction. You know,
you're throwing bling?
Bling.
Is that because it's the gold?
Throw bling, yeah.
Oh, I thought you said bling.
Bling.
Oh,
and bling. That is, you know.
Oh, I'd rather have bling than bling.
There's an argument to be made that the reason, one of the reasons that it, that this absurdity of a campaign is working, and it's the norm.
I don't know that it's working.
No, I'm not saying with Mitt Romney. I'm saying over the way, the absurdity of the campaign now. That's just nothing but a big marketing scheme. But the reason it's working is because they're only giving people what they want. Let me tell you something. People are watching.
That's the democracy.
People are watching so-called reality shows that have nothing to do. They'll take five morons, stick them in a house, and say they're supposed to have love affairs.
Are you attacking my friend, Honey Boo Boo?
And they'll beat the crap out of each other for 6 months and get drunk and look like complete idiots. And people will sit there and watch that week after week and talk about, did you see what, you know,
Garland,
the
schmuck
did last week?
An 8-year-old girl, Honey Boo Boo.
No,
you are.
I'm just saying.
You're out to get Honey Boo Boo, aren't
saying.
You?
We'll see. Or Housewives of Atlanta, Housewives of wherever. They'll show a bunch of super wealthy women
right.
who live in these huge houses, who ride around in limos, and the only thing they have to do is talk about fashion and fight all the time, and say, this is reality. And people will look at that and say, yeah, I watch reality TV. No, you don't.
You
so, to some effect, aren't we
schmucks? Describing the campaign process.
You're right.
I mean,
aren't
look,
we schmucks,
there were 19
Terry?
Republican debates. I mean, give me a break, you know. Does anybody say anything original or important in those?
I
no, they
something.
Don't. They repeat the same nonsense over and over again, and everybody thinks it's exciting.
I think most people know it's not reality. I think
well,
most
then if most
know
people know that,
the
then how come
TV,
50% of the people
I'll
are going to vote for Mitt Romney?
Most people know reality TV is not real. Most people know that Mitt Romney is all over the map.
And they're going to
vote
for him.
People
that are going to vote for him.
They don't care.
But I actually think at the end of the day, maybe not for the middle 10-20%, but for 80% of us, perhaps even, voting is cultural. We vote the way we do because we got friends that vote the way they do, because our parents voted that way, because our colleagues, maybe it's because of our ethnic group, maybe it's because of where we live, maybe it's because of our socioeconomic standing, maybe it's because of our religion. But a lot of people, Democrats and Republicans, vote the way they do because that's just the way they vote. And now I like to think that I'm not one of those people that I've actually thought through my positions, that that's why I'm voting the way it is. But, you know, hey, my parents are going to vote
let
for
me,
Barack Obama.
They're
going to vote for the Democratic Party. So, you know, I'm Jewish. You know, 3/4 of Jews vote for Democrats. So, you know, I have to say I fit the stereotype.
Let me say this, and I will commend to you and to our listeners a particular book. If you really want to understand, there's a great book by George Lakoff. There's two of them. One of them's called The Political Mind, and the other one is called Don't Think of an Elephant, in which he really in detail gets into why people think about politics the way they do.
I think it's
and
cultural
one of the big yes, and one of the big it's culture. One of the big things that one of the big issues is empathy. It
that's
has to do with
well, a minority
empathy.
Is more likely to have empathy than a majority.
Yeah, and well, it's cultural. It's empathy and the right belief on the right. There's a cultural, we'll call it cultural, on the right wing. No matter which culture you are, if you're right wing, there's a belief that human beings are motivated by self-interest and should be motivated by self-interest. And if everyone operates just like they should, which is motivated by self-interest, that will equal itself out, and
that's
everything.
That's the Ayn Rand philosophy,
will, yeah,
right there.
And everything will work out perfectly.
You just named Paul Ryan's favorite philosopher, Ayn Rand.
Right,
that's her
it.
Philosophy.
Everybody should
you,
be.
You look out for yourself and only yourself.
And everybody
if everyone
does.
Looks out for only themselves, the world will be a fine place. Of course, people who are sick or in trouble or just born or dying, they'll
right.
only go. It'll be like Sparta, right? They left the weak babies on the mountaintop to die,
yeah.
and they only kept the strong ones. The problem is that sometimes weak babies grow up to be very intelligent, smart, strong people, but oh well, we lost them.
Right.
I mean, that is a coherent philosophy. I find it amoral and disgusting, but it's not incoherent.
Right.
It is a coherent philosophy.
And it is part of a, you know, look, the United States, I'm going to hurt some people's feelings. We have myths about the U.S.
No.
That aren't
no.
true.
No.
We were, oh, America
no.
was, you know.
We're the greatest country on earth.
Yeah, that's right. You know, can you imagine if somebody, if you worked in an office, and every week some schmuck walked through the door and said, you know, I'm the greatest employee here. How irritating. Well, I mean, you think everybody would say, man, we love this guy. He comes in every week and tells us. But no, we'll walk around screaming at the top of our lungs, we are the greatest country on earth, and we don't think the rest of the world is looking at us saying, man, those guys are fools. They don't even have universal health care, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, but Mitt fits in that perfectly because he's saying, just like your analogy, he is saying he's the greatest guy in the world. He keeps on saying, I love it. He says, you know, I can do this. I can do this. I'm going to do this. He doesn't even understand that our government is not about him.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Terry. I talked recently with some people who lived in Massachusetts when he was governor. And these are people, by the way, who aren't particularly Democrats, Republicans, or independents.
There's who suffered in Massachusetts when he was governor?
And here's what they said. They said, you know, we didn't know. I think they even voted for Mitt Romney the first time because he didn't run again. They said we didn't know when he ran that he was running to help Mitt Romney. We actually thought he was running to help Massachusetts. And the moment he got to be governor, he started running for president. He didn't give a damn about the people of Massachusetts. The Democrat legislature the good things that happened basically were from the Democrat legislature, which overruled all his vetoes.
You're right.
They had more than 2/3.
And then he said he did it.
He didn't even try to run for re-election. Didn't even attempt to run for re-election. I mean, because he knew he would have lost by a 20-point margin. And so he went in. It was, for him, these people said it was fascinating. They said Massachusetts was a notch on his resume. He had
Unfortunately.
Well, I would say this. Part of it, again, is cultural. If you were born as a member of the top 1% and you have lived your life as a member of the top 1%, there's a very Machiavellian culture to the super, super rich. Everybody around you kisses your butt all the time. Everybody around you worships you all the time and tells you, hey, man, you're the greatest in the world. And people tend to believe that. You know, people tend to start to act basically believing that everyone should work to make me happy. I think Mitt Romney, and if you look at based on how Mitt Romney has acted during this particular election, it is I can do or say whatever I want without conscience, without remorse.
What do they
say about the fact checkers?
It's built as if one person, the same thing that Mark was talking about, but it's built as if one person can step into an office, be it a governor,
mayor,
or a president, that one person can step into an office and solve all the problems. And every couple of years we go through this same stupid ritual that has nothing to do with reality because one person can never solve all the problems. I don't care who it is, if it's John Kennedy, if it's Jesus Christ, forgive me for being, you know, blasphemous right there, but it can't be done by one person.
But I would say this, one person can screw them all up pretty bad.
Yeah, that
as of 2000 through 2008. Here's another number, you ready? Between 1989 and 2010, the top 1% of the population went from holding 30.1% of the wealth to 34.5% of the wealth.
While
the bottom 50% went from having 3% of the wealth to just 1.1%.
Those 47%ers.
50% of the people in this country own 1.1% of the wealth.
Because I read 0.3%. I read even less. I'm wondering if our dates.
Well, this was 2010. This is two.
That's after a few years of Obama. Because in 2007 they were down to 0.3%. You know, it's interesting. I think that when you look at the past, and I've often talked about the fact that middle class people, the engine of the economy, poor people, the engine of the economy. That Henry Ford, for all the bad stuff that he was,
and he was a bad dude.
He was a bad dude. Was right in the sense that he paid his workers enough to buy his Model T. But what's interesting about Henry Ford and the 1950s and the 1990s, when we had very strong economies and the middle class was strong in America, what's interesting is that with increased globalization, the rich, the top 1%, doesn't need the middle class anymore.
No.
In the 20s, in the 50s, they need the middle class to buy their products. The CEO of XYZ Corporation, GM or whatever, couldn't make a lot of money unless middle class Americans, average Americans, ordinary Americans were getting out there and buying their products. That's not true anymore. They don't have to pay the workers on the assembly line enough to buy their products because the people in China will do it less. The people in Mexico will do it less. Let me finish my point. The people in India will do it less, and when it comes to buying their products, they can also sell them to countries abroad. So for them, the middle class in America, they're just wasting
money. No, worse. They're an annoyance.
It used to be that the rich depended on the middle
class. For the 1% or the top 1%, 0.1%, it doesn't even matter if people buy things because they're making their money on managed capitalism, and they've been doing it for decades.
Gambling.
And they don't give a damn if anybody buys a car in China or Pittsburgh. It doesn't really make any difference to them. As long as they can speculate and throw the money around and have default swaps and derivatives and everything else, it doesn't simply matter what the public is doing or what the purchasers and consumers are doing, because managed capitalism gets around that problem.
And that's an important point, Terry, just because Bain Capital is one of those companies. Bain Capital is not someone who made a product. Even like I was talking about, at least people who are making products using Chinese labor or selling it to India or Mexico. But Bain didn't make products. Bain would use the company's own assets. They did nothing. They took the company's own assets, borrowed against them, bought the company, screwed over the workers, got declared bankruptcy. That's why Mitt Romney likes bankruptcy so much. Got rid of all the pensions, all of the union benefits that workers had really bargained for over many, many years, and then left the whole process. They didn't create a dime. They didn't create a product.
One,
they didn't create one staple.
Does create anything. They
gambled
money around.
And of course, when Wall Street gambles, if they make a lot of money, they make out like bandits, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars. When they fail, they're big to fail. So, as they say, they privatize the profits and they socialize the losses.
You know, I've said this. I've said this many times. A nation of sheep beat sheep. Begets a government of wolves. So I think there are two parts
of
it. Did
you create that?
No. I heard it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I love that. But again, it always, because I always like to, as much as we complain about the rich or whoever, whether it's the government or whatever, I always like to get back because, you know, the government, the people, last time I checked, there isn't anybody up there in Congress who, you know, there was no coup there. They were voted in. The president was voted in. As much as we complain, we put people in here. We put people in here who keep doing things. So now when I say we, there is a huge divide in this country, but they're able to do it. There were enough people who voted for George Bush to put him in a position to steal it in 2000. There were enough people that voted for him in 2004.
And those on the left that voted for Ralph Nader.
Oh,
boy, now all my calls are going
to
come.
Let me give out the number too, because to make sure in about 3 or 4 minutes we're going to start taking calls. 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Call in. We got lines open. We want to hear what you have to say. Be a part of the raucous. No, excuse me, caucus with us.
Raucously caucus with us.
Yes.
You know, one thing I want to mention, because I just heard it mentioned, you know, they asked, I'll give you an example of how far away we are from reality despite the economic problems. Somebody pointed, you know, they asked the question, you know, what is the biggest threat to the United States at this time in the debates last night on foreign policy? The one thing they both avoided and continue to avoid throughout the campaign is climate change. And I'm saying because many people, many scholars, many economists, and the Pentagon understand that that is our biggest security threat. It's predicted by 2020 by reasonable people, including the Pentagon, that there will be food riots around the world.
Yeah.
There will be water wars, quite possibly between India and China. The Pentagon is preparing for this because they know it's going to create chaos in the world. Did anybody mention that? No.
No.
We don't deal
That's
with reality.
Important.
We deal with nonsense like five-point plans that mean nothing.
Well, one more thing, though, about rich people, because you hear from the conservative pundits of the world that, you know, we're demonizing rich people. We're practicing class warfare. Let me say something about rich people. They did a poll of rich people and asked of millionaires, and they said, do you millionaires think that people who are millionaires should pay more taxes? And 55% of people making more than $1 million a year said, yeah, we ought to pay more taxes. So you can't even demonize all rich people. The majority of rich people actually think that income inequality is a problem, and they want to make it more fair. You can't even demonize the rich people. It's a minority of rich people.
Yeah,
it just happens to be a powerful
they
minority.
They do not think that way.
It's the Koch brothers.
And you know what it is? It is these really powerful corporate international corporate conglomerates who see that as the way to gain more power and own everything. So yes, but we're going to get back. Well, Mark, I think you've heated some people up when you talk about the Nader voters. And let me say this: I've been arguing with the Jill Steiners, the people that are voting for Jill Stein,
God.
Mickey Mouse, the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. That's who I'm voting for. The ghost of Abraham
Lincoln.
You know
what? Lincoln. If you live in the District of Columbia, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Even if you live in Maryland, I'm not happy about it, but I can deal with it. If you live in Virginia and you're considering voting for a third party, then I'm angry at you, and you deserve Mitt Romney.
Well, we've got people on the line. My name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D.
And we're the Raucous Caucus. We'll be back in 1 minute, and we're going to the phone lines.
Several amendments have been proposed this year to the Pacifica bylaws. In December, they will be voted on by the Pacifica National Board and by the delegates, who make up the local station boards of all the Pacifica stations. The proposed bylaws amendments are all posted at pacifica.org for your review.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. Once again, I'm here with
Mark Levine
and
Terry D. Kester.
And we are the Raucous Caucus.
You didn't say your own name.
Oh, my name's Garland Nixon.
There we go.
But see, everyone knows my name.
Oh, you think?
Worldwide, when people hear my voice, they
you
all
sound
shout.
Like men.
I think when they hear Nixon, they think bad things.
But go ahead. When they shout in unison by the tens of thousands, that's Garland Nixon.
Uh-huh.
You still live in the Watergate?
No.
Oh, okay. Just
yeah, he broke in a few years back.
I was about to say, I don't want to get that. Okay. We got people on the line. Hey, I'm just wondering. You know, I was watching the other day, Dave Chappelle has this, you can probably see it online, has this skit that he did where he's black and he was a white supremacist. You ever see that one? He was born blind as a child.
I've seen clips.
Yeah, they put him in a, they told him he was white and he became a white supremacist.
That's funny.
Well, I say that because I'm wondering if our certain caller is going to call tonight.
Don't even encourage him.
Don't even encourage him.
Oh, man. You think I could get away with, like, going to a KKK meeting?
I don't think so.
I don't think that would work.
I don't think it would work.
Don't try it. Don't try it. Please.
Yeah, that's right. I got to be blind. David Kelly over there says you got to be blind, so I guess it won't. You're on the mark, David. Okay, we're going to start with Tespa. Tespa, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening, my beloved friend.
Good evening, our beloved Tespa.
Thank you very much. I want to appeal to the American people to help me with something that is human rights in Ethiopia. How is human rights affected in Ethiopia by American policy? Let me tell you. The Chinese government gave jamming devices to the Ethiopian dictators, and the Ethiopian people cannot listen to the voice of America. Your money, your business, that goes to China. Made China so powerful, it gives listening devices, jamming devices, and all sorts of weapons of torture.
Well, we appreciate that, Tespa, but one question. Do you have anything on tonight's subject?
Yes.
Okay.
That is Mr. Romney ships jobs to China.
Yes, that's true.
For example,
that's true.
The GM parts manufacturing companies, about 38 of them, were in the United States.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Romney and his friends took all of them except one to China. Over 37 companies went to China. Do you know what kind of parts they manufacture?
What?
You buy their lower ball joint, which is only $14.99. I have never heard of a ball joint that costs only $14.99. And I called my mechanic, and he told me, just 2 weeks ago, he told me, the same ball joint came, and we told the owner of the car, this is not good. It is dangerous. We told him, and they say.
Thank you very much, Tespa. We certainly appreciate your call, and you're always welcome. We do want to try to stay on subject, but we certainly appreciate Tespa.
He's absolutely right, though, about shipping jobs to China. I mean, as Barack Obama keeps pointing out, Mitt Romney was a pioneer of outsourcing. Bain actually showed many companies the way to kill American jobs.
And let me tell all of our listeners right now, there is a website, bainport.com, B-A-I-N-P-O-R-T. Go to bainport.com. Even as we speak, Mitt Romney's Bain Capital has closed an American manufacturing company, and they are shipping the jobs to China, and the people right now have a website. They're outside. They're marching. You don't see it on the major networks, but right now the man's making money from it, Jermaine.
But poor, you got to realize, poor old Mitt, and he said it even in one of his debates, or in one of the debates, he put all his money in, or an interview rather, his money is in a trust fund, so he doesn't even know how many billions he's
You're right. I have the same problem.
Yeah, right.
In the Cayman Islands.
You know what? He definitely owns Bain shares. Yeah. And he makes money from this.
Yeah, he owns 8 million. Yeah. Jermaine, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Fine.
Good. Just a quick question. What do we need to do to get the third-party candidates on the same stage as the two, you know, the parties, the Democrats and Republicans, on a national stage where everyone...
You're going to have to elect them to some local governments first. Instead of having them run first for president, consider having running for a city council seat or a mayor seat or a local or a statewide a state seat. If they're just going to run as spoilers, which is unfortunately what they've done for the last 150 years or so, then they tend to hurt the candidate you most agree with.
And let me throw something else out to you, Jermaine, about the third-party candidates.
There's going to be a Senate candidate in Maine. He's a third-party candidate. Angus King, he's an independent. He's going to win.
Old Angus,
He's going to win the Senate. But the reason is because he went through the ranks. He won city council. Then he became governor of Maine. And now he's going to run the Senate.
And
he is a serious third-party candidate. They do exist, unlike the people currently running for president.
Here's the other thing, Jermaine. Okay. The reason that they are not powerful candidates is because they don't have a lot of people voting for them, right? The first thing you have to do is you have to convince people to vote for you. You have to convince people that you've got the right formula. Now, unfortunately, my experience here lately with a lot of supporters of third-party candidates has been this. Their way of convincing me is to yell at me and call me names. For some reason, that's never, that I know of in history, built a movement.
Or to tell me Obama's imperfect.
It's a bigger problem than that. And it's because, you know, even as you say, Garland, you know, you've got to convince people. Well, it takes money to convince people. Yep. That's just the reality. And unless you can get the Cook brothers behind you, you know, you're not going to have a chance. One thing you can do, though, is you can get involved with and pressure or call and support the League of Women Voters. They gave up. They were crushed and defeated. You know, they used to run the campaigns, the presidential campaigns.
The debates, not the campaigns.
Right. And, you know, they were thrown out, I think right after Ross Perot. They were thrown out because Republicans and Democrats didn't even want to face any of the issues that a third party might bring up. And now they have this commission, which is, you know, supposedly a semi-public commission, but it's really just run by the Democrats and the Republicans to make sure the tough questions are never asked. Support the League of Women Voters and try
sure
to get
the
them back into
asked.
The battle.
Okay,
I don't know that against you, Terry. I actually think particularly Candy Crowley, the two women moderators, Candy Crowley and Martha Raddatz, both of them did a terrific job, and I thought holding the candidates to the fire.
They still didn't deal with the real issues, my friend.
Well,
that's the key. You need a Ross Perot to talk about NAFTA, as a for instance, to get anybody to talk about it.
We're going to go back to the back to the phones, but I'll say this again to our third party listeners and to our callers and other people. You know, the way to accomplish something is to build a movement.
That's right.
And let me tell you how not to build a movement. By yelling at people and calling them names and telling them they're brainwashed and they're in a cult and they're stupid. That does not build a movement. You build a movement by convincing people that you have good answers. And unfortunately, I'm telling you, I've run into that lately. I try to have a reasonable conversation with people, the third party voters, and say, this is my position. Ah, you brainwashed cultist, Obama, blah, blah, blah. And I think to myself, now, if I were of a mind to listen to what you had and say, wow, that makes a lot of sense, I wouldn't do it with you calling me names. You'll never convince anybody. But that's the stupidest thing in the world.
One of the best ways to help third parties is to change state election machinery. There are states, and look, Louisiana is one of the most corrupt states in the United States on a whole bunch of things.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
One thing they've got right is they allow everybody to run for an election, and they take the top two candidates, and they have a runoff. If you have that
system,
then vote green, vote third party, vote libertarian, vote whatever you want, and if your candidate gets the second most amount of votes, then you could go in, and they might actually win. But if they don't, you could still get in someone that's better than the 40% Republican. Republican guy. The problem is that election law is not that way in most states. In most states, a plurality rather than a majority is enough to win, meaning if somebody gets 40 and someone gets 35 and someone gets 25, even though 60% vote against the guy, the one with 40% wins. Work to change your local structure. And like I tell you, it's working in Maine. In Maine, an independent is about to be a senator. There's an independent senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders. He's a socialist. He got in, again, working through the system, and Bernie Sanders is a credible guy, unlike, I think, some of the people that run.
Well, it's Jillian. I wonder if it's Jillian Stein. Jillian, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Hi, Jillian.
Hi. Good evening to all.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I was wondering, I heard little bits of Mr. Romney when he was talking about the pipelines and the gas and oil.
Yeah.
Where he indicated that it would take him 8 years to make sure that the oil and the gas and this coming in. Did we understand that he wants 8 years to do what he has planned and President Obama should only get 4?
Very, very brilliant point. I never thought about that, but that's a good point. He's saying it's going to take me 8 years to accomplish my plan, so shouldn't we certainly give Barack Obama 8 years? And the question should be asked, so it's going to take 8 years? Yeah, well, then why do you only give me 4?
I'll tell you something else about energy.
We got some smart listeners.
Very smart listeners. That's a very good point, Jillian. One of the things that the Republicans keep saying is we need more offshore drilling. We need to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We need to do fracking and destroy the water under Nebraska so that every single ounce of oil is discovered. And when you press them on it, people who know the issue know that they're not using all the grants they have now. There are oil companies, ExxonMobil, who have huge, huge areas off the coastlines of the West Coast and the East Coast. They're not even drilling right now, but they want more set aside just in case they may want to. At the end of the day,
they don't want to drive the price down.
If they were to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and all the places they want to drill, it would take 20 to 30 years, and it would lower gas prices about 3 to 5 cents after 20 to 30 years. To me, switching to a green economy, switching to wind and solar and all those things, that's clearly the way for the future, not putting aside more money. So Jillian's absolutely right, but it's not just in the case of a pipeline. It's true for all fossil fuels.
You've got to admit, guys, and this is where, you and I sort of disagree here. I mean, and our callers, I think, disagree a lot, too. The problem is we're not doing enough about green energy.
Agreed.
And yes, Obama started to try, but then he backed off, and he's backed off in the debates. And he should not. And again, I'm not going to go through the whole facts and the statistics, but this global warming thing is real. This is not a minor issue.
Ice cap.
And the whole idea of drilling more, of using more coal, even Obama's supporting using more coal and brags about what he's done for that, is
that
absolutely absurd and destructive.
Yeah, I agree, Terry.
Somehow or other, we got to get the candidates, be they Republican or Democrat, to actually talk about what's going on in this world and in this country.
I have no confidence that that's going to happen. And so in 20 to 30 years, we'll be either drowned or we'll be, black and crispy from the UV, rays frying us all. We're not going to do anything about global warming, and we are going to pay the price.
Yes,
Professor!
And people, always talking about they don't want, their children to suffer, and so therefore they don't want to get rid of Medicare or whatever. So
they won't be here to suffer.
Won't have to suffer paying for it. Their children are going to suffer. Everybody's children is going to suffer just because of global warming.
No, they'll be, but we want to go. We got a couple people.
Let's give out
the
number again. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Call in.
We've got the professor. I remember a rapper named the Large Professor. The Professor. Professor.
Hello, Professor.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'd like voters out there who are still saying that the Democrats and Republicans are the same.
Oh, gosh.
Then they should vote for the differences in
right.
the candidates.
That's right.
Because if they see differences, voting should be easy for them. Otherwise, I see it as a sense or a case of colored blindness.
Colored blindness?
What do you mean, colored blindness?
I think one of you knows how I'm expressing the word colored.
Well, that was certainly a word used to describe African Americans 50
Correct.
Years ago.
And you, well, it, there's no
what,
question.
What's your point about colored blindness?
Basically, looking at what Romney offers and what Obama offers, everyone's saying that it's the same. But with Obama, when he first got in, he was going to be, as they said, a one-term president. No other president did they say that for.
Yep.
Not even for Clinton,
yeah,
who made 8 terms. How come this phrase of out of nowhere comes, he's going to be a one-term president?
Well, let me say, thanks. I'm going to go to our caller in a moment. But first, I'm going to address that. Let me explain something. This is what I believe. One of the principal differences between the right and the left is this. People on the left tend to believe in universal rights, that everyone should have the same rights.
That's right.
The right tends to believe in a hierarchical system of rights, where depending upon your station of life, they believe very much in a caste system. Yeah, a class or caste system. You get more rights if you're at a higher station and lower. Here's the problem. In the traditional class system in the United States, black people fell at the bottom. If you believe that, and some guy who you believe should be at the bottom of the class system gets elected, it blows your class system to pieces.
Blows
so when they say he's destroying America, from their perspective, he is destroying what they believe America should be, a system where people in at different classes and different stations have different rights. So what they think about America, they really believe he's destroying it, because he's destroying the – when they say we want to go back to whatever the good old days, during the good old days, people were more
knew
set
their
in places,
place.
And they accept knew they either accepted or they were forced through violence to accept or through sexism in the workplace, through discrimination, through anti-Semitism, through whatever it was, people were forced in America to accept the places, the rights that they could have.
Let me throw in a little bit of support of that idea, because here's the big difference between Obama and between Mitt Romney. At the very least, if you're thinking of voting for a third party, and don't, please, but if at the very least, Obama, simply by being Obama as well as by doing what he has done and what he has accomplished, has really forced the issue of thinking about what kind of country are we and what kind of country do we want to be.
Yep.
And I guarantee you, if you just had Mitt Romney's in office all this time, that would not be an issue that would be discussed openly at all.
Yeah.
And Obama has inspired that discussion, and it's the biggest question we have to face as a nation.
Two quick things. One, I think that while you're right, Garland, about Republicans tending to support a caste or
right
caste
and
system,
left. I didn't even say Republicans.
Well, that's fine.
Right,
conservatives. I actually think it's unconscious for most conservatives now.
I don't think they're openly,
unless they're in the Klan, I don't think they're openly espousing it. I think it's in the back of their minds, not the front of their minds. And in some ways, that makes it more insidious and more difficult to target, number one. Number two, if you are thinking of voting for a third party, I really hope you're a conservative. And I want to encourage all conservatives out there who want...
Libertarian.
People who want to vote for Mitt Romney, take a look at Goodlatte on the ballot. He's right-wing conservative.
Is he the guy in Virginia?
He's a guy in Virginia.
He's our man.
He's further to the right than Romney. Take a look at you could write in
Ayn Rand.
Ron Paul.
Ayn Rand.
You could write in Mickey Mouse. Conservatives and people on the right, please vote for the third party. It will harm your candidate Mitt Romney, but you'll get to feel good.
And I want to encourage
every right winger listening to my voice to vote for a third party, and I would encourage every left winger listening to my voice not to be such an idiot.
And let me just add this to the far right wingers out there. There's no difference between Mitt Romney and Barack
That's
Obama.
Right. So vote for Goodlatte.
Let me just say this. Nathan, a man of whom I just spoke. Nathan is about to come
on. Maybe a different Nathan.
I'm sure this is our favorite Nathan.
Probably.
Nathan, you are calling to convince us of something, I'm sure. Let me just say this, Nathan. Yelling and calling us names is not going to be very effective in convincing us. I want to hear, you seem like a very smart guy. I want to hear a reasonable argument instead of the yelling and calling of names, and then, of course, we'll have to cut you off. I'm tired of going through. That's getting old, isn't it, Mark?
Nathan, welcome to the Raucous Caucus.
Nathan was just talking a whole lot, but I don't think we heard him.
Nathan, you're on.
Hello.
Yeah, buddy.
You're on.
Why don't y'all say these 1% are rich white men instead of pretending that just rich people? It's the same rich white men who enslaved my ancestors and worked them to death. The same rich white men who had free labor, and that's what they're trying to do now. They're trying to get free labor, send them to China. Say rich white men. And Terry D. Custer, then I called one day and you said George Washington treated his slaves good. They had free housing and free health care.
No.
What kind of mess is that? That's what you said.
No.
I was listening to you on that day.
No, you're wrong.
That's
Nathan.
Our Nathan.
Nathan, you're wrong.
I don't recall
Nathan,
Terry.
You're wrong,
Terry. I doubt it very much if Terry said that.
I tell you exactly what I said, Nathan.
Go ahead, Terry.
And I'll tell you, and I'll tell the American people again, because it's important. I did not ever say that the slaves at George Washington's were good or well off. I said they were better off than a minimum wage worker in United States today.
Oh, well, Terry,
I disagree with you.
I'd have to argue, Terry.
Because minimum wage workers today live a miserable life, but they're not beaten, they're not lynched, they're not taken away from
their owners, the slaves.
Are you kidding?
Shoot them.
Talk to the immigrants.
I'd rather be an immigrant.
Talk to the Latinos.
No, I'm not saying
talk
the Latinos are well treated. I'm not saying that.
It's just changed the methodology, the same exact thing.
It's not slavery.
I think I might have to go, join.
I agree with Nathan today.
Nathan,
actually.
Nathan and Mark and Garland stand in unison together.
Yeah. No, listen, I'm not at all defending how they treat minimum wage workers or Latinos, and I know it's miserable, but they're not lynched. They're not separated from their families. No. Well, actually, I guess they are.
What do you mean they're not separated from their families? Are you paying attention to what's happening?
They were pretty much
in this country. Are you kidding me, Mark?
They were pretty much treated the way Nathan treats us. That's how they say it.
They are separated from their families constantly. They're separated by poverty. They're separated by disease. They're separated by imprisonment.
Yeah, they ain't separated by a whip. I tell you that. Okay.
Separated by deportation. What's the difference?
There's still a difference. It's not much, but there's still a difference.
There's no difference if you're them.
Terry, spend a couple years in slavery and then call me back and tell me about the difference. Stephen.
Stephen?
Hi, Stephen. All right, man.
Go ahead.
Welcome to the Ruckus Caucus.
I just want to say I thank you guys for being on every week, just giving us all of the people that want to be informed, giving us insight.
You're welcome, Stephen. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah. When Mitt Romney talks about his five-point plan and him bringing the jobs, I believe him because of this one theory that I came up with. Okay. Mitt Romney and Bain Capital are like the poster child of gutting America in the middle class, in the middle class jobs. What if he was to bring all of these jobs back to America for Americans to get these high paying jobs, to get all of these 401ks, to get all of this stuff that America is used to doing? So what we'll do as Americans in the culture of America, we'll buy, spend, just like we did with the subprime loans in 2008 in the crash over the housing market. They'll bring these jobs back just to do this on a larger scale. And you think that we'll have you think we're in a depression now? If he was to bring all these jobs back and we were to get all these jobs and we end up buying whatever bubble that they come up with in the market, we put all of our eggs into it, they'll just bankrupt those jobs.
See, Stephen,
it doesn't matter because neither Obama or Mitt is going to bring Obama or Romney is going to be able to bring back jobs to this country.
Well, no, actually, Terry, I disagree.
It's just
there's
not
a difference.
Going to happen.
No, let me give you one difference.
We live in an international community. We don't live in a private little nation over here in the Western Hemisphere anymore. It's just not the way things work. You're always going to find cheaper labor. The biggest companies in the country in the world are international. They are not national, and they don't care about being national.
Yeah, but Terry, look, I agree with everything you just said, but here comes the slavery issue, not on that, except the part after
here's my point.
No, but I also recognize that despite globalization, there are ways to combat globalization. No, it won't undo globalization at all. But one of the things that does distinguish Obama from Romney is Romney believes that companies should get special tax credits, tax cuts, special tax benefits if they fire an American and hire an Indian or a Chinese person or a Mexican instead.
Yep.
Barack Obama believes exactly the opposite. He believes that companies that outsource away from America should pay higher taxes, and companies that insource to America should pay lower taxes. So at least he gets the incentives right. Will that end globalization? No, of course not. But it will mitigate it to some extent, and that may be the best we can do.
And let me throw
this
in.
That's about all we can can do. You're right. That is the best we can do.
Let me throw this in there, because one of the things you said is Mitt Romney, you believe that Mitt Romney will bring the job, blah, 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 and this happens. Now, think about this, though. I got to always get back to this. If somebody tells me they're going to do something, whatever it is, I'm going to ask you,
how
are you going to do it?
Right.
So we already know what Mitt Romney's going to do. And this is going to come to you as a shock that a Republican would use this as a plan to do anything. Lower taxes for the rich,
right,
and do away with regulation for the regulations. Now, pretty much guarantee you that if you ask Mitt Romney or any other kind of Republican, if you said, you know, there is a comet hurtling at 20 miles per second towards the Earth,
tax cuts for the rich
will kill us all, I need a plan.
Stop regulating the comet and tax cuts for the rich.
Yeah,
guys, you know, I got a question regarding that.
Has there ever been
a good president who was, in fact, a businessman?
Was FDR a businessman?
No.
No?
Have we ever had one? George Bush is the closest to come to it.
And he was a terrible businessman. He bankrupted every company.
Let me think about that, because I can't think of one. Herbert Hoover, was he a businessman?
He was good. You ever heard of Hooverville? Let's go to, or Hooterville.
Hooverville. Get your mind out of the gutter, yeah. Garland.
Mark, yeah, no,
you don't
want
to know where you hang
that
out,
was
Garland.
An old, that was an old petticoat junk. See, you guys? That was petticoat junk. Okay. Marvin.
Hello, Marvin.
Welcome to WPFW.
How you doing?
We're wonderful.
Good. Yeah, I just tuned in about 15, 20 minutes ago. My question is, I may have a comment. And starting with President Obama, you know, a lot of African Americans in this country and voted for him, I think because he's the first African American president.
I don't agree.
A lot of expectations, and but if you look at it, if you're going to compare, let's say for instance, okay, the 8 years that we had George Bush when he gave tax cuts to the rich, when he lied about torturing detainees at Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and all of that, and this administration had done a lot in secret that the American people are not even really aware of. If you're talking about signing of the Defense Authorization, most of us don't even know what that entails, that you can try someone and detain them indefinitely without due process. And
we've brought that up many times.
Policy, he had detained twice as more immigrants than George Bush did. Okay, and
he instituted the DREAM Act through
executive
order.
How do you explain?
We can't defend everything, okay, and we won't try to defend every single thing Barack
Obama
has done.
A lot of these bankers. Okay.
Well, let me ask you this, because we're running out of time. Can you get to the crux of your point here, to the meat of your point? Because we only got
you like Romney better than Obama.
Well, let's let him get to the. I'm waiting to hear the point.
I don't like Romney better than Obama, but I think we as progressives and we need to. Well, I mean, whoever we vote for, we need to really be diligent and hold these politicians accountable.
I agree with that.
That's fine. But we can't think that Obama's perfect. He's not. We never said he was perfect.
We said only that he's better than Romney.
That's all we said.
Than what George Bush did.
I can give you a lot of differences between him and George Bush.
People to really, really hate this country. When you kill
He took our troops out of Iraq.
Yeah. Well, he said his drone policy wasn't. And I'll say this about that. Let me say this. Thank you very much. There is no question that there are similarities between George Bush and Barack Obama and Mitt Romney and even in policies. You're always going to find some. You can take any two presidents in history and find similarities between their policies. The issue is never the similarities.
Yeah, you don't vote on the similarities.
Right. I mean, it's like two cars. Which car do you want to buy? Well,
they both have steering wheels.
They both got windshield. You don't buy them.
Neither one of them has wings that can fly.
Right.
I'm not going to choose any car.
Right. You look at the differences. That's why you're going to choose between two cars. When you look at a president, you look at the differences. The differences between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are stark.
And the other thing that you've got to consider, and you really need to consider this, is President Obama or any president is, whether we like it or not, caught in the system.
Yep.
We do not have a dictatorship. We do not have a king, at least not yet.
Right.
So he has to work in the system, as rotten as we may think it is and as rotten as it actually is. But if he can make the slightest change and the slightest dent in that system, then he's worth supporting. And he has done that in many ways. The Dream Act being an example, which didn't pass, of course. Health care being
an example, Terry has made
a dent in the system.
But
he instituted
the Dream Act administratively through executive order.
Because the Republicans wouldn't allow him to do that.
Yeah, it's even stronger.
Let me quickly, just a shout out to all my friends in Virginia. Our state really, really matters. Sorry to you folks, District of Columbia and Maryland. We like you. But
hey.
Let me tell you something. Ohio, yeah, all right. You're the most important state in the United States in 2 weeks. Virginia, you're number two. I predict that Barack Obama is going to win the 237. Everyone always knows he's going to win. And Wisconsin and Nevada and New Hampshire. What that means is he's only 13 electoral votes away, and Virginia has 13 electoral votes. If he wins Ohio, Virginia is not necessary.
Unless the Democrats really get out of
the vote. I got to tell you something. If Ohio wins, Virginia is not necessary. But right now, Virginia is tied, and he may well lose Ohio. We need every single person, particularly in Virginia, to get out and vote for the president.
All right, you've been listening to the Raucous Caucus. My name's Garland Nixon. I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And Terry D. Kester.
We are on every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. at WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. If you want to email me, garlandn@gmail.com.
My website's marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter.
And don't email Terry because he's a madman.
www.org.
All right, we'll see you next week.